You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, stream our show at nprnews.org/listen live every weekday at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the show.
Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Glad you're listening along with us today. This hour, how colleges are weathering and managing COVID and what it means for their future. At UW River Falls, students are going home for Thanksgiving and not returning in person until late January at the earliest. At Boston College, students are staying through Thanksgiving and not going home until December 10th. At the State University of New York, Oneonta, students must test negative for the coronavirus within 10 days of their departure for home. And the Ivy League has canceled its winter sports season. They were the first Division I conference to make that call. All of this is to manage what Yale health policy professor Daniel Paul Thiel told the New York Times is the possibility of, quote, unleashing little ticking time bombs. Asymptomatic students who carry the virus off campus and into their parents' and grandparents' home. But college and university management of the pandemic has been inconsistent and in some cases incompetent. When I asked Atlantic Magazine science writer Ed Yong what he thought of decisions to keep students on campus, he said this.
In March and April, it was clear that this pandemic was going to continue to be a problem. And so, you know, that's the time when colleges need to say, okay, we might have to do something very different come September and October, you know, when we think about reopening. And it just seems like a lot of that time that could have been spent planning was squandered. And instead, you know, a lot of theatrical measures put in, ridiculous stuff like tape being placed in front of a lecture theater, you know, small plexiglass dividers. Yep. It's absurd.
When I played Mr. Yong's remarks for Minnesota Health Commissioner Jan Malcolm on Monday, she said this.
You know, I do think the Institutes of Higher Education did put a lot of effort into trying to develop plans for how they could do their educational mission more safely. And I think that there's been really relatively little transmission in the school, you know, in the educational activities themselves, that the transmission is happening because of socialization.
So this hour is to sort out how schools are making these decisions and what it means for students and their families. If you're a student returning from a college campus or you're the parents of one, how confident are you in the school's decision-making on the pandemic? What do you think about the restrictions that they have enacted? What about the testing or lack thereof? I guess I'm asking how confident you are in your college or university's decision making. And here's something else that has come up. Are you reconsidering paying the full tuition to that school if most classes are going to end up online, at least for the spring semester? So asking this morning, if you're a student returning from college or going to a school here in Minnesota or in the upper Midwest, or you're the parent of a student, how confident have you been in the school's decision-making on the pandemic? And for parents and students, are you reconsidering the full tuition payment for the spring semester if most of the classes are going to be online? Here's the phone number, 651-227-6000. Wherever you are in the Midwest, 800-242-2828. And on Twitter this morning, at Carrie, KERRI NPR. Our guest, Rebecca Smith, is with us, epidemiologist and professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, with us from Urbana, Illinois. And Professor Smith, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me on. It's nice to be here.
Chris Marsicano is with us, founding director of the College Crisis Initiative and professor of higher education at Davidson College, with us from Nashville. And Professor Marsicano, welcome to you. Good to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, Carrie. I'm just thrilled to be here.
Yeah, Professor Smith, you heard Ed Yong mention those theatrical measures that many schools took on, aimed, I'm sure, at calming fears of students and parents. Some of it was more of that and less true management of the virus. I know Champaign-Urbana was pretty pretty ahead of the curve on the testing, at least. I want to know what you have learned in the last 3 months since students showed up on campus. And as you look back, what you wish you'd done and what you didn't do.
We have learned a lot. So at UIUC, we decided very early on, back in March, that we need to take this seriously and to work fast. So we developed a testing system that would allow fast, frequent testing, and we're currently averaged 10,000 people per day. Everybody on campus has to test twice a week to have access. And all students who live in town have this.
Professor Smith, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we're getting a lot of interference on your phone line. I think we may try to call you back so we can steady up the line a little bit. Can we do that?
Sure.
Okay. Well, now you sound clear, but let's try it again. We'll call you back. We'll talk with Professor Marzicano about this, and hopefully we get a clear line from you. Professor Marzicano, same question to you. What have you learned? What did you do, and what did you not do, and what have you learned about that?
Sure. So I'm the director of the College Crisis Initiative, which studies how colleges and universities in general have responded to coronavirus. And we've basically found there's a four-pronged approach that if you can, as an institution, take that approach, you can keep your students safe. We call it the Ferrara approach, and I can talk a little bit about why we call it that in a moment. But effectively, if you can control mobility on and off campus, if you can test your students out the wazoo, if you can build a sense of community on campus, and if you can make sure that that you share data with your public health department, with other institutions, you can keep most students safe. Unfortunately, however, most institutions didn't figure this out until about halfway through the fall.
And Professor Marzicano, when you're talking about the testing and some of the other measures, I mean, you heard what our Minnesota Health Commissioner said, which is it's not happening in the classroom. It's probably not happening, you know, much during the day on campus. It's really controlling the socialization. Did you find some magic formula to encourage students not to socialize, even when they were off campus? I mean,
it's a great question, Carrie. And anybody who has ever been a college student or has ever known a college student knows that there's at least some group of college students who want to relive the movie Animal House on their campus. And that is certainly the case at campuses across the country. I just want to stress that the vast majority of students don't want to be home. They don't want to be in their parents' basement playing Xbox. They want to be on campus. And so for every one student who's not following the rules, there are 10 that are trying so hard to stay on campus. They're wearing their masks, they're social distancing, they're taking care of each other. But unfortunately, if just one student lets up, you can have an outbreak on campus.
So Professor Smith, given all of that, how did you control for the, hey, I'm following the rules during the day when I'm on campus, but I'm basically doing what I want when I'm off campus. And that has happened in a lot of college campuses. How did you work with that?
It has happened, and it does, unfortunately, continue to happen. We have tried to message as best we can to the students that the choices that they make on the weekends will show up on Monday morning when they come in to test. We see a spike in cases every Monday morning, and we can tell them that that's because of the socialization that's happening Thursday and Friday nights. And we can point to our dashboard and say, you can see what's going on. And I will say, early in the semester, a lot of our cases among undergraduates were related to large parties. As we've gone through the semester, most of our cases among undergraduates are actually related to small gatherings, so gatherings of 10 or fewer, and to travel, that they like to go home to see their families on the weekend. And unfortunately, with the rising cases around the Midwest, for a lot of them, home is not as safe as campus at this point. So we have seen a change in behavior. Unfortunately, small parties can be just as difficult as far as spread as the large parties, especially if people go to different groups of small parties over the course of the weekend.
Right. So they got the message, you're saying, on the large parties, hey, you gather 50, 60 people together, you're asking for a big spread of the virus. Now you're working on how to get the message through to students that even having 8 people over to your apartment is a problem. How's that going?
Exactly. We are slowly, I think, making progress. But of course, today is the last day of in-person instruction for our campus for the semester. So after Thanksgiving, we are virtual only. So we will hopefully not have as many students in town. And we are certainly going to limit socialization after the break, because if students are coming back to town, it's to focus on their classes.
All right. Let me grab some calls here. If you've just tuned into the conversation, Rebecca Smith with us from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Chris Marsicano with us as a professor of higher ed at Davidson College, where he directs the College Crisis Initiative. It's a discussion this morning about some of the decision making that went on college campuses and university campuses regarding the virus and the fact that the number of coronavirus cases on college campuses right now exceeds 255,000 cases. So whatever schools are doing, a lot of it has not worked. And there's great concern about kids on college campus communities taking the virus, especially if they're asymptomatic, taking it back to their families, to the homes of their grandparents or their parents. So I'm asking you this morning, if you have a student returning from a college campus or you are a student returning from college, how confident are you in how the school has managed the pandemic on campus? And then we're going to talk a little bit about tuition. There's a lot of discussion among parents about not being all in on paying full tuition if all of the classes are going to be online. I'm not making a judgment. We've gotten into this before on the show about whether online is as good as in person. But there are parents who are worried about paying the full ride if it's all going to be online. So I'd love your views on that. 651-227-6000-800-242-2828 on Twitter at Carrie and Piarda. Judy. Oh, and Judy in West St. Paul. Hi, Judy.
Hi there. How are you?
Doing well. What's your view on this?
Well, you know, I've got a kiddo that goes to Stout, and both his dad and I are older. We're in our 60s. We're those older parents. So, yeah, we do worry when he comes back. But he does get tested pretty regularly because he lives in a house off campus with several other kids who have either had it or had exposures. I mean, they've all had exposures. So it's amazing how many times these kids are actually getting COVID tests. It really kind of blows my mind as a healthcare worker, seeing people not being able to get them, and yet they're able to get them over on campus. I think it helps him living off campus. The one concern I have is that most of his classes are online right now, except he's in the industrial design, so they actually do have to go to the studio and do things. But I think they've done a really good job of only having so many kids at the studio at the same time.
So, Judy, if you're a healthcare worker, you know that testing at a certain time before he comes home to your house is important. Is he going to have that test, like 10 days before?
Oh, I think he will. And then while he's here, he's going to be home after next week. They're sent all the kids home. So.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, and we wear masks where we go. Both my husband and I don't go out much. I teach at a local university, and it's all online. So, am I worried about him coming home? Nah, because he's been home several other weekends. And like I said, he gets COVID tested so many times, it really blows my mind.
Okay, good.
How many times he's been tested.
You've brought up something I also wanted to talk about with our guest. Professor Marsicano, I was surprised at the number of schools that are testing, including U of I, Urbana-Champaign, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But I was also surprised at the number of schools that are not testing. What's the protocol look like on your campus at Davidson?
Sure. So first, before I talk about Davidson, I want to give credit to where it's due to Professor Smith and the good people at the University of Illinois. Carrie, at one time earlier in the semester, the University of Illinois was conducting 1 in 50 tests in America. Now, I want to repeat that number. That's not 1 in 50 tests on college campuses in America. Right. That's 1 in 50 tests in America. So Illinois has absolutely been a leader in testing. But I think what we've done at Davidson is not terribly dissimilar. We test every single student once a week. So what that means is that Davidson, a small liberal arts college, similar to a Carleton or a McAllister or a St. Olaf in Minnesota, Davidson has around 1,800 students on and around campus. And so we test every single one of them every single week. What that allows us to do is isolate cases before they have the opportunity to spread. And so far, we've had a pretty successful run on it. At the end of the semester, we've had some students release their concerns a little bit more than we would like. And so we now have 14 cases on campus. But that's 14 cases on campus compared to hundreds at other institutions. So we think we're doing pretty well.
Yeah, Professor Smith, you were held up, your college, I should say, was held up as an example of testing and how to manage this. And yet I know you ended up with an outbreak in late spring. Isn't that right?
We had an outbreak in September.
In September, yes. Okay. And what happened?
What we found early on when we designed our program, we work with our public health department to do contact tracing. And what we found very early on is that these students were avoiding contact tracers and were actually breaking isolation.
Wow.
So we had, with that first spike, we had students who were breaking isolation to host parties, which, of course, became super spreader events. So that caused our spike. When we found out that was happening, we did two things. First, we partnered with our public health department. We have a team on campus now that they're now at within 15 minutes of a positive test result. The person who got that test result gets a text from them explaining what is expected of them, who will be calling them from public health, what number they should look for, that they have to pick up the phone and work with the contact tracers, and to make sure that they know what's expected of them as far as isolation. And if they're on campus housing, to get them into isolation within that first 15 minutes.
So
and that
really
has been incredibly effective.
You solved for the fact that students had, were gaming the system in some ways, right? They'd figured out how to avoid the contact tracers and they were having these gatherings that were spreading the virus. You figured that out, it sounds like.
Yes. Well, some of them were gaming the system. Some of them were just simply, they don't pick up the phone if they see a phone number they don't recognize.
Well, yeah, I don't either. Right. So
neither do I. So we realized that they will answer a text from a number that they don't recognize, especially if it says this is student affairs. So it helped to learn that the way to communicate with students, if you start with a text, they're going to pick up the phone when that phone number then calls.
I want to play something here about some of the universities that aren't testing. It's a story done by NPR's Elissa Nadworny, and she's just been spending much of the spring and fall traveling to different college campuses. This is a story from October about how few schools, 2 out of 3, were really leaning into testing. Listen.
Colleges are social breeding grounds. I mean, they're super social places. And if schools can't get in front of outbreaks, they're playing catch up. And so spread is happening unknowingly and seeping into surrounding communities. And many colleges are ending the semester early, sending students home in November.
So that's some context about how other schools are handling the testing or not. A call here from Joshua in St. Mary's Point. Hey, Joshua. Hi. Thanks for waiting.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I had two kids graduated recently. Our daughter graduated from University of St. Thomas 2 years ago, so we didn't do it. Mm-hmm. But that gave me the advantage of being able to kind of touch base with that college and see how my son's was doing because he graduated last spring. And I just thought I would put in my 2 cents worth as to not be so kind of idealistic about how we look at a lot of colleges. They're so tied into our identity, our development, our life path, that it's easy to romanticize that and not look at them as economic ventures. Mm. And frankly, I feel a lot of what is happening on college campuses with people trying to, we're shifting online, but we're not reducing tuition. We want to keep bodies on campus, despite kind of data, is really a bald economic decision. Our son's experience at Wartburg, which is a very good school, they hemmed and hawed for probably 10 days to finally make the decision to have kids stop going to school and suggested everyone go home. And they did it literally when the kids had been on campus 52% of spring semester, so they technically did not have to do any kind of refunds.
Wow.
They ended up caving to that some pressure and reorienting some things, and they also asked a lot of people to donate. And they ended up refunding maybe 40% of unused housing and did not refund any of the meal fees. Mm-hmm. I just found that as really, you know, contrary to how they were educating people with a Judeo-Christian religion. And I know I got a lot of pushback on that on social media from some people, and some people agreed. I'm data-driven. I called probably 12 different small liberal arts colleges in the upper Midwest to kind of contrast and compare. Most of them, well, all of them did better than my son's school, but I know it's a learning curve. However, I really recommend us looking at it as an economic venture, because it is contrary to higher education and following data and being responsive to people's needs and development and health to keep people on campus in this. And I just think there's a lot of aspect that is really just economically self-serving to try to, you know, do measures that are still exposing people to risk and spreading the virus.
I have
to
say,
our campus right now has 15% of, I think they had last count 260 people on a campus of about 1,700
who have COVID positive virus. I have to say, Joshua, it's uncommon that we get a caller who has done that level of research that you've done. So I appreciate benefiting from the research that you did on that. Professor Marzocano, it is undeniable that this is a financial hit for colleges and universities. What do you think of Joshua's concern that there are, and by the way, some of the reporting on this reflects this too, that there are decisions being made because colleges are in a tough spot financially?
Yeah, so I think, thanks so much to Joshua for bringing up these important issues. The first thing I will say, which is sort of hard to hear given the rising price of college, is that unless you are attending a for-profit institution, chances are, even if you're paying full price, full tuition, full sticker price, full fees, you are not paying the full cost of what it costs to educate you. So most colleges and universities run on a discount model, where effectively everybody gets a discount and they make up their operating budget through donations and their endowments or state appropriations of their public institutions.
Uh-huh.
So when you take the economics into it, as Joshua wants us to do, and it's really important to think about it that way, you see why this is such a massive issue, is that institutions cannot remain open, cannot keep their doors open unless they can charge at least somewhere close to full tuition and fees. And so we've seen a lot of institutions basically make the decision to not increase their tuition next year. That's something that Davidson has committed to doing. But it's also really important to understand that just because you're online doesn't make it cheaper for the college or university, and in fact can make it more expensive. I take, for example, the Cal State institutions, which made the decision very early on to stay online for fall 2020. They took a lot of their operating funds and put it into training their professors how to teach online.
Hmm.
That costs a lot of money. Building that infrastructure is a lot of money. So while it is not the same experience that students signed up for, it's still not free. This is not the same thing as putting class on YouTube. And so I am sympathetic to Joshua's concerns here. It's not the experience the students signed up for, but it is still an education and one that costs something to produce. And I want to point out just one last thing Joshua made a really important point about how institutions in the spring sort of had a slow response.
Right.
That was the case for some institutions, but 70% of colleges and universities shut their doors and transitioned online between March 6th and March 12th. That's a period of a week. Nothing gets done in a week on colleges. This was an extraordinary time that took extraordinary measures.
Professor Smith, really important insight there. I guess I hadn't really thought that it costs as much, if not more, to transition to online classes. I was thinking about the concerns about quality. And again, this is not me. This is a number of parents who are paying some pretty big bills for college tuition, saying they're not getting the full experience. We know why, but why hasn't there been some, you know, kind of meeting in the middle? What happens to the University of Illinois, a land-grant university like yours, as the state of Illinois goes through some pretty tough financial times that are coming down the pike from this pandemic? Because you're probably not going to get the kind of funding that you would hope for, right?
That is certainly a concern, and we have been through this recently. The state of Illinois went quite a long period without a budget, fairly in the last few years, and the University of Illinois then had to survive without the payments from the state. But we are a land-grant institution, and we do rely on state funding for a lot of our budget, but we are also a major research institution. And so a lot of our budget also comes from supporting the research. And the research has never stopped. So the research keeps going. And that's really an important part of what we do as an institution. But as far as what the parents are saying, that is it worth the tuition, I think we have to ask, what is the expectation? Is the expectation for a good education from top-notch professors? In which case, online can be as good as in-person for a lot of classes. If the expectation is the college experience, and Ian Bogost at the Atlantic wrote a beautiful article about how maybe the expectation is not necessarily just the education, but also this coming-of-age ritual,
right.
This experience of being on campus.
I read that.
And if that is the expectation, then I understand that students are not getting that experience. And that is going to be something that people will have to contend with for themselves.
Miles called in to say, I'm a student at a private college in St. Paul. When students are paying full tuition, they want to get their money's worth, and they will ignore the calls to stay in their room, and they'll go to parties. If you reduce tuition, students might not feel like they have to get their money's worth, and they may follow restrictions. On Twitter, Kate says, my son has had a robust academic semester at Hamilton in New York, lives in a pod, tested 3 times a week, very few violators, and those were expelled. Living under COVID stress is exhausting. However, would never try to reduce the tuition. Profs are working hard to make this work. Conversation this morning with our guests, Rebecca Smith, epidemiologist, professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and Chris Marsicano. He's a founding director of the College Crisis Initiative and a professor of higher ed at Davidson College, getting your views as students and as parents of students about how this is working on campus, how colleges are weathering and managing COVID, and what it's going to mean for their future financially and beyond, and taking your calls and questions here. Right back to the conversation now and to your calls to Cooper in Rochester. Hi, Cooper. Where do you go to school?
Hi, I'm a senior at the University of Denver in Colorado.
Okay, how's it been going there at the U of Denver?
It's been going good. I'm really proud of how I think the student body came together. And every time that I was, so we did have in-person classes, I would say majority of professors chose to do their courses online. But I did have the opportunity to go to in-person classes, and I think whenever I was on campus, there was a very small number of students on campus, and everybody was following the guidelines. Now, to your point earlier about like the off-campus
right.
kind of nightlife,
right?
There definitely were some situations with there's one sports team that everybody got suspended for having a party.
Wow.
But in terms of, like, I lived on campus or right near campus, and I wasn't the normal campus vibe where you'd walk around on a Friday night and you'd walk past two house parties and the bars were never packed like they used to be. So I really felt like on my campus, they were taking it very seriously. The testing was definitely there. They required a test for you to come back and then another test halfway through. So I guess it could have been more, but it was free and you were allowed to do it as much as you wanted. So everybody was taking advantage of it.
So are you, you're home for the end of the semester, right? I assume until January or February, or how's the school managing next semester?
Yeah. In terms of next semester, it's, I'm not sure what they're going to decide to do in terms of online or offline. We haven't gotten any news on that.
Okay.
The University of Denver, we run on quarters, so we actually are off Thanksgiving to New Year's, and we did go online for our last week of classes, which was this week. So this is our last week of class, and then...
You're not sure what they'll do.
Yeah,
for...
we're not. Yeah, it's kind of like everybody else. We're
this,
up in there.
This is one heck of a senior year, though, Cooper.
Absolutely.
I mean, nothing you could do about it. But wow, you know, this is not how you thought your last year of college was going to go. I'm sure it's good to have your call.
Absolutely.
Glad you had.
But it's, you know, we're trying to make the best of it. And yeah, I would say, from a student perspective, I would love to be more engaged in class, but it's just so hard in the online environment. But I give my professors as much credit as I can for, you know, learning on the fly and creating new content as quick as possible and trying to make it as engaging as possible.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Good to have
you. Thank you.
Professor Smith and Marsicano, since we've started talking a little more about online education and the quality of it and what it takes for the school to shift to that, I was reading an op-ed by a business professor at New York University who said that he thinks this experience is going to encourage colleges to become much more creative and interested in online education. And here's what he wrote. Universities don't need to abandon in-person teaching for students who see the value in it. They simply need to create parallel online degrees for all of their core degree programs. By doing so, universities could expand their reach by thousands, creating the economies of scale to drop their costs by tens of thousands. So, Professor Smith, I hear that as there will always be demand for these parallel online degrees that are as robust as what you get if you're on campus, but this would cost less and it would open up the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign experience to people that could afford that and not the full on-campus experience. What do you think?
I think there is absolutely a place for it. Now, I'm a professor of veterinary medicine, and there are aspects of veterinary medicine that you cannot teach online.
Of course.
You have to be in person for that. But there are aspects of our education that we were already in the process of creating online versions of for online education across the country and across the globe. We have a lot of interest from international partners in continuing education and in improving their education through taking our online courses. So we were already set up to do a lot of that. And since March, when we went virtual only, even in the vet school, and now with starting today, we'll be virtual only even in the vet school for the rest of the semester. We have been sharing some of those online resources with our other vet schools around the country and really learning how a lot of what we teach can be done online, reserving that in-person class for what really needs to be in person.
Right. Yeah, Professor Marsicano, it's an interesting idea here, which also means, hey, you're not getting anything less in an online experience degree. I mean, you know, moving past this idea that online is lesser than, how interested do you think Davidson is in that?
So I think in general, colleges recognize that online education is a major part of our future. And you know, I want to clarify that when I talked about online having an expense, I mean, that setup expense is the biggest expense. And then continuing to pay faculty to teach online is a big expense, too. Okay. So just because you can get those economies of scale doesn't mean that, you know, doesn't mean that it's a slam dunk anyway. But look, there are two business models that have been around for 1,000 years. Breweries and colleges. While some breweries over that time went from small local industries to multinational corporations that work at scale, think like Budweiser, others have embraced the in-person experience of a local microbrew. And so we're seeing that same thing happen with colleges. Some institutions, Purdue, University of Arizona, have made massive investments in online education. Others are going to double down on a small, intimate experience, places like St. Olaf and McAllister and Carleton. Either way, the market's going to support both approaches. Just like you can go to any bar in the country and order a Bud Light, you can also order a local craft beer. So both approaches can and will work.
It's a very good analogy. Love it when we are talking about beer on the show. A listener here says, online ed, college student here, online ed for me has been spotty. Some professors are unable to understand online classes. They don't understand how to use the medium. Connections with fellow students is a big part of education that's missing. Also, cost of tuition should be lowered. Here's a professor, Terry Ann. She says, I teach at the U in a program that was 75% online pre-COVID. Even for us, the pivot to all online was stressful. And to create good online experiential learning, not just lectures, is time-consuming and expensive. To Ellie in North Carolina. Ellie, you work with Chris Marsicano, is that right?
Hi, yes, I do.
Glad you called. Hey, what do you want to add?
Hi, so I'm a senior here at Davidson College, and I've been working with the College Crisis Initiative since July, and I just thought I would kind of mirror Dr. Marsicano and tell you the other side of the coin of what it's actually like to be a student on campus. And I think overall, my biggest thing I can say is that I've been really impressed with not only Davidson as an institution, but our students and the community that we've built here. I think it's really hard to, especially someone who's been researching this all semester, to see what it looks like across the country to be a college student, to be a part of this narrative of how we're affecting the nation right now. I mean, Dr. Marsicano and a couple of our research affiliates did some research and came out with a paper earlier this semester that traced 3,000 cases a day to colleges and universities reopening. So wow. I think understanding our impact has been so huge while also giving ourselves some time to be appreciative of the sacrifices we've made to make this possible.
Well, so Ellie, what has the experience been like for you when you're not, you know, because you heard us talking about it's not the on-campus classes. What happens off campus in the evening with your friends?
Well, if I'm being frank, I think where I've seen the most of my cases that I've been aware of on campus come from is a lot of just eating off campus. So it's not even always this image of partying and big mistakes and large group gatherings. Sometimes it is being in the wrong place at the wrong time or being next to someone for a little too long out in public who's not wearing their mask correctly. So I think that we've been very vigilant. I think there has been a culture of accountability, but also grace on campus of understanding that it's really hard to be perfect every single day.
For sure.
If you can make it through the end of the day without putting anyone else in harm's way, that's huge. And I think a lot of us have been living by just that. I do think us having more cases right now on campus than we have all semester is very reflective of the community having more cases on campus than they have all semester. So I think I've been really impressed with my peers, at least that, I mean, I won't waste my breath saying there's no gatherings that ever happen, but we've all been really limiting our impact as much as possible, especially when it comes to how we're affecting the outside community.
It's good to hear. Enjoy your Thanksgiving and college break and Christmas break. Good to have you on the phone, Ellie. Professor Marsicano, I don't want to say missing because we're kind of focused on this moment right now. I guess what would be the greatest challenge that you identify for schools emerging from this, let's say the vaccines work, it's summer, schools are ready to bring students back in the fall. What is that? And I don't just mean from a COVID thing. I mean, generally, what are the greatest challenges that confront colleges at that point?
That's a great question. And sort of before I answer it, I just want to say thanks to Ellie. It's always great when your students can show off how
talented
and brilliant they are. Way to go, Ellie. Good work. But I think it's, so first off, I think that that assumes that the vaccine will be given to students before the fall. You know, we've got two pretty excellent vaccine candidates from Pfizer and from Moderna. The fun story about Moderna is Dolly Parton helped fund it. I'm a big fan of Dolly being in Nashville.
I know. She's such a philanthropist. Yeah. She's great.
She's wonderful. She's wonderful. But even still, the ethics of who gets the vaccine first should come into play here. And by and large, 18 to 22-year-olds who contract the virus show very few symptoms or mild symptoms, a fever, aches, that kind of thing. The biggest issue with the spread among 18 to 22-year-olds is their ability to spread it off campus. So I am not, spread it around to people who are more more vulnerable to the disease. And so I am not sure that students will be the ones to get the vaccine the fall. I think it may be elderly people. It will certainly be frontline healthcare workers. But I think we may be still with these protocols in fall 2021. Having said that, eventually we will be done with them. Eventually we will have a sustainable policy solution to combating coronavirus across the country in all facets of our society. And when that happens, I think colleges and universities are going to have to realize that that online education is here to stay, but that they still must build that community. The institutions that have been the most successful at combating this virus have been the ones who have built a community of trust among their students, faculty, and staff, and have had this sort of we're all in this together mentality. And I firmly believe whatever the next crisis, whether it be wildfires in California or floods in Mississippi, that institutions can fight those crises, can respond to those crises better if they have a strong on-campus community.
Professor Smith, I'm coming to you in a minute, but I just want to hear from Sue in Roseville about how this is affecting her kids. Hi, Sue.
Hi, I'm also a student, Carrie, and love your show.
Thank you
for broadening our perspectives.
Thank you.
Also an 18 and 20-year-old college students, and we've all had different experiences and in all three different states. What's been most disappointing is the Greek life. My senior daughter, we had to pay for the housing, et cetera, and the entire house got COVID because there was no place to quarantine.
Wow.
And there was no, which has been really disappointing because she's a music major and an orchestra student is missing that. She made a wise decision to go online, so she's safe, but is missing out on that experience. And I really believe college is about, half of it is about that social experience. And so that's what I'm missing in my my education is just the talking with the professor and classmates and colleagues as you're walking in and out of class. I'm really missing that. But good decisions in going online for right now. I do believe we should be paying tuition. Appreciate the compensation for meals and housing when they're not being utilized. My youngest daughter's college has done a phenomenal job in Illinois in managing their COVID cases and testing and reinforcement of rules, et cetera. And I still think we have an opportunity as a country to come together and get a little bit more consistent in our experiences here around managing this virus.
For sure. Thank you, Sue. Have a good holiday with your girls. Professor Smith, what is the thing that you would identify as colleges emerge, and Professor Marsicano's point is really well taken, that the vaccine may not have reached the college population by the end of the summer. What do colleges now know as we emerge from the pandemic that's really important?
So I think one important thing to bring up, there's a lot that we've learned, but one important thing is the accessibility of the college experience. Now, University of Illinois has always prided itself on accessibility for the on-campus experience, but there are always students who would really love this high-class university experience, but who for various reasons just can't be on campus. And this rise of the online education has allowed them to take part in classes that they never could have experienced before.
That's great.
The rise of working at home has allowed people who have disabilities or who have mobility issues or various other issues with getting into the office every day have been able to take part in the workplace much better than they ever could before. And learning that we can make work more accessible for those who can't be there in person and make school more accessible for those who can't be there in person, I think we should grab onto that and keep that going and make the world just a little bit more accessible.
Rebecca, thank you. Your insight has been so valuable today. Really great to have you on the show. Thank you for the time.
Well, thank you for having me.
Chris Marsicano, thank you. Really great to have your experience and knowledge of what's going on at Davidson and beyond. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Rebecca Smith with us from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Chris Marsicano with us from Davidson College, founding director of the College Crisis Initiative.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. If you'd like to hear more conversations like this, subscribe to our podcast. And thanks for listening.